Welcome to the Embodiment Conference 2020, also on behalf of the whole team behind the scenes. Thank you for your attention to another amazing presentation about intimacy and relationship. My name is Ilan Stefani and it's my pleasure to be sponsoring this channel, as I deeply believe that aliveness, embodiment, intimacy, relationship are key to individual and global change. My ongoing somatic research is focused on more and more aliveness for each and every one of us. I tune into the fields of collective trauma, of intimacy, of love and rage, shadow work, and higher level of energy. If you are curious about my work, you might want to catch my presentation on this channel as well as on the main stage. And you can also head over to my website, ilanstefani.com. My methods have been described as an embodiment training for warriors. However, you are so welcome to find out yourself. I teach online and in person. I teach in German as well as in English. Thank you for your attention and please enjoy the following presentation.
All right, so let's get to it. I have the honor of introducing Jason Diggs. Excuse me. His presentation is called Conflict Equals Energy, Transformative Conversations. Jason is the co-founder and course leader of Authentic Relating Training International, and he describes himself as a modern Renaissance man, equal parts artist, philosopher, teacher, and video producer. For many years, he worked for Ken Wilber and other clients to create thousands of hours of educational media on the topics of transpersonal psychology, spirituality, productivity, and personal growth. For the past 4 years, he has been a trainer and facilitator for groups within the authentic relating and circling realm and is obsessed with how humans can live and relate optimally. Well, I'm very excited to dive in. So Jason, I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you, Gabby. So I'm excited. There's over 60 folks online. And once again, raise your hand if you want to be on video, and that will be the way to ask questions throughout the presentation. And I also will be having little interactive moments. And I actually presented last year at the Embodiment Conference, and I'm excited to do it again. Mark Walsh is definitely one of my teachers and facilitation. I've probably had like maybe 5,000 or 6,000 hours of facilitating groups in my lifetime. And Mark became a teacher of mine. I started to seek to realize that embodiment was so key to leading groups. And I started to teach some of my facilitation students, you know, you are setting all of the possibilities and limitations for the group with your embodiment. And I just started to say this out loud when I was teaching, and I was like, what am I actually talking about? But like, I have a background in embodiment as a practitioner, as far as five rhythms and contact improv dance. But I've never, been a yoga teacher or embodiment teacher. And I started to write about it. Actually, the second chapter of my book, Conflict Equals Energy, the second chapter is called Embodiment. It starts with polarity and then goes to embodiment. And so I started to look online of like, oh, who are the world's best embodiment teachers? I have to study with them. It's such a key to authentic relating. Me and my co-founder started to say this thing every single course. Authentic relating is an embodied practice. It's about decoding all of the information that's happening in your body and being able to communicate it skillfully to others to be able to get your needs met and take more leadership in your relationships. And I found Mark through just a Google search and took a one-day course with him in London. And it was just an introductory course. And I swear I learned more about facilitation, embodied facilitation from Mark in 7 hours of just watching everything he did and everything he didn't do than I've learned in, he's definitely a mentor of mine. I got to hang out with him in London, have lunch with him that weekend. And so we've been colleagues ever since. And I appeared on the Embodiment podcast after I released my book a couple months ago. So let's all take an embodied moment. You know, we're zoomed into this rectangle in front of us, like literally and figuratively, right? Where our attention, which our attention is actually the sum of the 4 trillion cells in our body, right? Plus or minus a few million, or a few billion, actually, I guess. So I think of like the, if you think of the membrane of a cell, it's this pliant thing that allows information in and out. There's certain receptor sites on each cell that allows, this one allows magnesium into the cell, and this one, you know, gets rid of waste. And in essence, every single cell in our body is aware. And our embodiment is the sum total of our awareness in the present moment. That's the way I like to think of it. So let's all just take a nice stretch, big breath with our arms over our heads. We'll do that once more. And at any point during the next hour, if you need to take an embodiment stretch or a break, just remember that your shoulders have eyes on the back of your, there's like eyes on the back of your shoulders where you can perceive what's behind you. You can perceive what's over there. It's not all zoomed into this little rectangle in front of us. We can get hyper focused. So I want to just, I really want to request that people be on video, raise your hand and be on video if you would like to, if you're able to for this session, because I'll be doing little interactive things. So who here has done authentic relating or circling? Just raise your hand. Okay, 2 out of 10. We got lots more people raising their hands. Who here considers themselves an embodiment teacher in some way? It's like they're actually offering either workshops or sessions, or, you know, to the public. Nice. So we have some experts here. Who's an expert in embodiment? I would say everyone. We all have a body. And one more question to see who's here. Or who here is in Europe? Raise your hand. Who here is in America? Raise your hand. Isn't it cool that we can have these technologies of connection? In my book, I talk quite a bit about the effect of technology on our embodiment. And it's almost like when we are cued into these little rectangles, our iPads, our iPhones, our Android phones, it's almost like a disembodiment practice. It's like the sum total of our awareness, which is 360. You know, I like to think of this phrase, this comes from my dance teacher, Amber Ryan. The sum total of our awareness is 360 in every direction. And then we zoom it all into this little rectangle, which it's almost like a disembodiment practice. So therefore, we need to practice both embodiment as modern human beings on the regular, and we need to practice authentic relating, like embodied connection with each other. So I'm going to go into the presentation. I only have 4 slides, but I have a lot to share. And if you have if you have a question along the way, go ahead and raise your hand, and Gabby will just be tracking the gallery view, and see if you want, or just actually put it in the question and answer chat is probably better. And then I'll answer, and then we might even bring you on video to ask the question live. I want to make this as interactive as we can. So let's see, I'm going to share my screen. And we can take one more little embodiment break while this is switching. I say embodiment break, but maybe that's not the right word. It's refocusing the attention on the body and the breath. So authentic relating is a clearly defined set of tools and practices designed to create nourishing and lasting connections. And these tools allow us to bring leadership into all of our relationships at work, home, and with friends. And so I co-founded Art International 3.5 years ago, and we've been doing courses all over. We've actually done courses on 4 continents in like 25 cities or something like that. And the growth has been really quick for us. And authentic relating also comes from a practice called circling, which is much more deep dive. Like let's get into the nitty gritty and the mystery of things over the course of an hour, you know, whereas authentic relating is much more clearly defined and there's a lot of structured games and practices that we have to exercise our emotional intelligence, to exercise our social intelligence, our social awareness. We're doing empathy training. And empathy and listening is something that we can continue to grow in through our whole lives. And I think it's so important in this day and age to be able to listen to someone who's different than you. And this is the end goal of authentic relating, is to be able to listen to someone who has a different perspective than you and to maintain dignity and humility in the face of difference or conflict or tension. And that's why I titled my book Conflict Equals Energy, because in a sense, masterful communication in our relationships involves being able to transform conflict and tension into clarity, connection, and teamwork. And that's the thesis of the book. And the book has 30 tools that we can apply directly to our relationships right away. And it also goes through the full theory of authentic relating, which obviously I won't be able to do in 1 hour. So how to tell the truth without blowing up your relationships. That's my summary of authentic relating. So authentic relating is a polarity. How to tell the truth, be authentic without damaging the connection. You know, it's like a balance. We're not dropping truth bombs and walking away. We're not doing radical honesty. Radical honesty is actually a great organization. I'm not referencing that specifically, but if authenticity is overemphasized and relating is underemphasized, that is not skillful relationship. If we're attached to belonging and we don't have the ability to be authentic, that's called codependence. So everything lives in a polarity. Some of the main polarities that we work with in authentic relating are dignity and humility, my perspective and your perspective, authenticity and our relatability or impressionability, like how receptive we are, self-definition, the ability to define, oh, this is me, right? Versus vulnerability. I know who I am versus I'm learning who I am. So authenticity or polarity is not, like, fear and love is not a polarity. This is like a little bit of an intellectual bone I like to pick with people. A polarity is not an opposite. Yes, night and day is a polarity and they're also opposites, but a polarity is two positive values that we need to balance. We need to stretch our hearts and minds to encompass both. And so that's why dignity and humility is one of the main ones that we work with. And dignity and humility, the deeper teaching on that is they each have a shadow of posture and collapse. So authentic relating is an inquiry practice. It involves presence, appreciation, and curiosity. You know, reflective listening is the primary tool that we have to transmute conflict and tension in our relationships into clarity, connection, and teamwork. And so I'm going to go over these 5 tools. Is that my computer beeping, Gabby, or is it? Okay, let me just, actually, let me stop the share. So I want to take questions before I'm going to go through the five main tools of how to transform conflict and tension in our relationships. Five main tools of, and the book actually has 30 tools in it. So I'm going to teach on each of them. I just need to close my Gmail because some people in my family are messaging me over Gmail. Let me close this browser actually. Sorry for the beeping. And I'd love to just pause the content section of this presentation. Like I said, I'm going to go over a lot of specific tools and we're going to be able to have some dialogue and I'll take more questions later. Are there any questions currently before I go through these five tools? We can also take that little embodiment stretch. How is that for you personally, for me to deliver, even though it was less than 10 minutes, I think I talked for, well, maybe it was 11 minutes. How is that for me to just like, we all process information differently. An aspect of authentic relating is learning how we do things uniquely, how we process information. How we do relationship. Panelists can't post to the Q&A, so you can put your questions in the chat. Oh, okay, thank you for that, Kat.
So Jason, there are a couple of questions coming up in the chat box here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see them all. Okay. So is this similar to nonviolent communication? So NVC, was the absolute cutting edge in communication technology in the 70s and 80s. And it went all around the world. You know, I'm going to go into gallery view for a second. Who here has heard of nonviolent communication? Yeah, that's like 80% of us. Many people in the chat raising their hands. Who here has read the book or taken at least one class in nonviolent communication? Yeah, the nonviolent communication book was part of the curriculum in my original training, my original circling training. So it's a foundation. They coined this term, own your experience. And one of our five practices of authentic relating, I don't know if I'll get to that part in this presentation, but practice number four in the five practices of authentic relating is owning your experience. And our version of owning your experience is a little bit different than nonviolent communication. It's not just about changing your language to be ownership language. We think of this as making I statements, staying on your side of the street, you know, speaking in a way that's inarguable. Our version of authentic relating is, be the emotional maturity you want to see in the world. Take full responsibility for your impact, your energy, your experience, and be the solution. And your language, like how blaming and victim-y your language is an indication about how much experience, how much responsibility you're taking for your experience. And we all do it. We all blame circumstances for what's happening on the inside. I call this the primary addiction of humanity is to blame, right? Who here has siblings? Raise your hand if you have siblings in the chat. Yeah. She did it. It wasn't me. He did it. You know, that impulse when we're children. Is it okay? Okay, then I'm giving an in-depth answer on this question. I don't know if I'll get to all of the questions, but children cannot contain the emotional charge in them when they feel blamed. And they must deflect it out. And when we're identified with a child part of ours, it's the same way. And so the last two chapters of my book are really about how we transmute and digest and metabolize emotional energy. So yes, this NVC or nonviolent communication is one of the foundational cornerstones that authentic relating developed from. Circling is another one. So it's in the history, it's in our lineage, so to speak. Let's see. Avoid taking out anger on someone else when one gets me mad. Yeah, I think that goes back to uniqueness. We all handle anger differently. Learning about your typology, whether that's through the Enneagram or a different typology system, and becoming aware of how you respond to anger over time is really the only solution to that. And authentic relating gives a lot of tools and like specific practices. Like we have a practice called emotional Aikido, a process that allows us to be more aware. You know, I learned this story from one of my spiritual teachers, and it illustrates how our awareness develops, how we grow. So imagine you're riding down a street on your bicycle, and just you're feeling it, you're pedaling, and then out of nowhere, you hit a huge pothole and you're like, your nervous system's jarred and like you go home angry and you have a bad day. And then the next day you're riding your bike along the same route. And it's like a fraction of a second before you hit the pothole, it happens again. and you like go home, you get cranky, you have a fight with your significant other. And then over the course of 10 or 12 repetitions, you actually become more and more and more aware of that groove in your nervous system or that pathway that you're taking home on your bicycle. And eventually you steer around the pothole. Actually, eventually you just take a different street home. And so I like to say that authentic relating is not about healing. There's other modalities that are mainly about healing. It's about putting new options on the menu. All right, so it's 9:24 in Boulder, Colorado, at least. Let's take a little stretch break. The breath is exceedingly good, isn't it? Take a sip of your beverage if you have one. I'm gonna pour a little more tea in my tiny tea pot. How do you personally Zoom? How do you personally interact with this medium that has been so, so important in our lives in the last 6 months? I'm making an assumption that for most of us here, this is not our first time on Zoom. Well, it's probably a safe assumption. So I'm going to go over 5 tools. And like I said in the beginning, my book has 30 tools that you can apply to your life right away. And I really wanted to make it highly, highly practical. So I'll talk about, you know, a really important philosophical concept within authentic relating, like presence or curiosity or appreciation. You know, appreciation is the power of the heart. I'll talk about that for literally like 2 to 3 pages, and then I go right to a tool of how to apply it. And that's the pulse of the whole book. There's 12 chapters and 30 tools throughout the book. And there's some resources in the back. There's 12 different games and exercises that you can lead with your people in your life. So I'm just like looking at the gallery view and the people here. I wish we had a little more time. I want to do some more interactive things with the with folks here, but we'll do that at the end if we have time. I'm going to go through these 5. Gabby, are there any really important questions that I need to answer before I shift gears back to content?
Sure. There was a clarifying question in the chat from Anika. She asked, I don't know if I got it right, but do we have to sacrifice total authenticity for connection?
Great. That's exactly where I'm going to go next. Anything else?
I think that's the relevant one, just to clarify in the moment there so we can keep moving. Thanks all. And thank you for your patience. I know we have lots of questions we want to address, so thank you for understanding.
All right. So one of the primary polarities that we work with within authentic relating is the polarity of belonging and authenticity. And Gaber Mate, the Canadian psychologist, has a beautiful teaching. And it's based on research. I mean, it might be more of a loose anecdote, but he says this thing that is that's really framed and shaped my understanding of how humans develop, like really how we're made and how we're put together. He says, as children, if given the choice between authenticity and belonging, we will choose belonging only 100% of the time. We will always, always, always suppress our expression, suppress our authenticity for the sake of maintaining connection. It's just how our nervous systems are built. Survival is first. And if we feel with our tiny little developing nervous systems that our caregivers' approval and belonging is at stake, we will absolutely suppress our expression. And in a sense, this is actually a very natural process. It's exactly how things should happen. It allows us to develop a healthy ego. We need to, I'm gonna say something a little provocative or extreme. We need to be shamed if we hit another child, right? We need to learn how to fit into society. And if we don't, we end up with antisocial behaviors that prevent us from, you know, being successful in life and fitting in with society. We need to learn that. We need to be shaped, essentially. However, the downside of that is that we end up being defined by our society, our family system. Okay, I think I just had an idea of the thing I want to do at the end, if we have time. So the question, Gabby, was, can you remind me of the question? Because I want to just tie it back in.
Of course. Do we have to sacrifice total authenticity for connection?
No. And that is the main aim of authentic relating, is to uncover our authenticity, to become more and more self-defined and more like knowing who we are through to the core. Through, and here's the key, small experiments, small tests by expressing and speaking the truth and noticing that we don't get rejected. Because if we express our truth in a way that's rageful, we might break our relationship. We might get fired from our job, right? So in order to start to trust that it's okay for us to speak our truth, we need two things. We need progressive small experiments in the ability of like, oh, wow, I just told my best friend the truth and, you know, of something that's not working for me. And that was a really scary conversation, and I felt some tension, and I was nervous to have it, but I had the courage to engage that conversation. And on the other side of it, after a half hour conversation, we feel more connected. We actually feel more clear in our relationship. We need to have those experiences dozens of times in order to be an authentic person in the world. And essentially, that's why my book became centered on how we handle conflict and tension in our relationships, because I realized that this was the pathway to mastery in communication and the pathway to social and emotional leadership. A lot of the introductory practices in authentic relating are about connecting with ourselves and, learning to express ourselves, through making clear and vulnerable requests, which I'm going to talk about next. And a lot of the practices in authentic relating are about creating connection and being seen and heard and felt and, creating community. And then the more advanced ones are about conflict transformation. When I'm full screen, Gabby, I don't have the ability to see the time. Oh, we're great on time. This is cool. Okay. So let's all raise our arms and take a big breath in. I'm going to do this once more and I'm going to stop the share for one moment. If you're in the big group, I want you to go into the chat or into the gallery view. Turn on your camera if you had it off for a little while. And we're just going to do literally like a 90-second practice. I'm just waiting for more people to turn on their camera if they like. Okay. So three times. Some people are raising their hand in the... Yeah, we can wait. We got all the time in the world to do everything we want to do. Let's add a few more people who want to be on camera.
I also just want to take a moment to remind folks, when you're using the chat, if you want people to see the whole room, whether it's the main room on all attendees, to make sure that you send your chat to panelists and attendees. Thank you.
So three times, we're going to take a deep breath, raise our arms at the same time, and let it out with a sigh. You don't have to make a sound if that feels weird to you. And then along the way, I want you looking at the gallery view. Right now I'm able to see somewhere between 20 and 30 people. I'm not sure exactly. And I want you to watch everyone else do it while you do it. And then just notice what happens for you in this kind of group movement. Okay, so let all your air out and in. And then quickly unmute yourself, and then I'll wait 20 seconds, and then we'll do two more. Let all your air out. And for the second time. Thank you. And I want to hear from two people. Please keep your share between 20 and 30 seconds. What was that like? What did you notice in your awareness when you did that practice of watching everyone else while you did the movement? And yeah, just make sure you're on mute and start talking. And say your name if you want.
Hi, I'm Megan. Kind of relating to what you said before, I noticed that I would hold my breath unnaturally to match everybody else.
Interesting.
Hi, I'm Anastasia, and it felt like we're having a flash mob here, which was very encouraging for me because usually I'm shy to do such things in front of the camera.
Nice, nice. Cool. I want to use your share Anastasia. I think I pronounced that right. Anastasia. Flash mob is the modern recalling of ancient things in our DNA. When humans move together and breathe together and sit together, we know that we belong. Conscious, unconscious level. When we move together, when we breathe together, and when we sound, make sounds together, we say, these are my people, this is my tribe. We do it like this here. And for hundreds of thousands of years, this is the way our nervous system evolved. And we're under very, very, very different evolutionary pressures in our modern society. Really since industrialization and you know, people started flocking to cities 400 years ago. And even more so since mass travel started, you know, 100 years ago. And even more so since, you know, smartphones were only invented like 13 years ago, 14 years ago. So we're in this little experiment about what these things are doing to our brains and nervous systems. And that's why authentic relating is so important, practicing intentionally creating belonging and tribe. And our mission is to equip people to be able to do this in their lives. So I'm going to go back into the presentation. Thank you so much. And I'm going to try to leave questions for the end and talk about these five tools. I really wanted to give people a takeaway around how to have transformative conversations. And so this is the takeaway. These are five of the tools in my book. And I put this one first, making clear and vulnerable requests, because I have found it to be the single most powerful thing in relationships. So understanding boundaries as communication, I kind of hate the word boundary. It's really prone to misunderstanding. A boundary is not a barrier. A boundary is much more like that membrane of the cell that I talked about in the beginning of this presentation. The membrane of the cell, it defines inside from outside, and it lets things in. Let me let in all the right nutrients. And nope, I have too much of that particular nutrient right now. And the receptor sites on the cells are intelligent. They know whether or not they have enough phosphorus. And oh, don't need any more phosphorus. If I keep taking in phosphorus, that's actually going to be toxic for the inside of the cell. So boundaries are actually communications. And making clear requests, you know, owning your experience is kind of like speaking, you know, when you did or said this, I felt or experienced this. Honestly, like NVC is absolutely genius. And it was really, really important. But that's grade school for owning your experience, the way we teach it. If you want to be at the level of college or getting your master's in communication, making clear and vulnerable requests, it's like you're transforming your own experiences into solution-oriented. So I want to talk about vulnerability for just a second. Vulnerability is not sadness or grief or difficult emotions, things that we think of are difficult emotions. Vulnerability is anything that is a risk for you. Risk, taking a risk might mean expressing 10% of the anger that you feel inside with your partner, because more than that would be like completely frightening and overload your nervous system. And if you're able to express 10% of the anger that you have in a constructive communication, That is vulnerable for a lot of people. Anger is vulnerable. Making requests are vulnerable. If you're making a request, it's not a demand, and you're open to a no. As soon as you make a request, you're open to a no. And that's why it's inherently vulnerable to make a clear request. And so often in communication, we're just like trying to subtly hint at what we want with everybody and trying to subtly control the situation so we get our needs met. And so that's why this one tool is like, it boils it all right down. So tool number two is, and this is, I can almost put quotes around this. These are words that you say out loud in a conflict or a tense situation with other people. Can we slow down? Can we slow down? And this has a practical application in a conflict, or a practical example of this is, hey, can we slow down? And you know, I think this is an important conversation, and I'd like to really give this conversation the attention it deserves. So can we sit down and just carve out a block of time to have this conversation? That's an example of slowing down the conversation, because you know, you might, if the other person is triggered or activated, you might be the more insane person in the room right now. And you know that the more connection and breath and slowness is there, the more likely there's going to be a constructive conversation happening. So being aware of the human nervous system and what happens when we're triggered, I make a difference between triggered and activated. Activated is kind of like there's anger or upset or something going on for me. And then I still have most of my communication skills online. I still have most of my higher values online. I know who this person is to me, and I know how important the relationship is. And triggered is when we actually, like, our compassion goes offline, our ability to take another perspective goes offline. Even the fact that this person has been a valuable, you know, colleague for the last 2 years goes offline, and we're acting and behaving in ways that are damaging your relationships. So this gives us the best chance to go from triggered to activated, or to go from activated to less activated, and have a constructive conversation, and as much of our skillful communication online as possible. So let's take that 10-second break. How do you learn? How do you personally absorb information? All right. So, psychological safety net. Relationships are fragile without safety statements. What I mean by this, it's based on the research from Google. So Google did all of this research in 2015 around what makes high-performing teams. And they said, I'll just summarize it in a very short time. They said, there's these five factors that really make for an awesome, high-performing team. And by the way, all four of the other ones depend on this one. And this one is called psychological safety. And so there's, you can research this, you know, there's articles out there in, you know, all of the business blogs and all of that stuff. You know, I went researching and I didn't actually find a lot of useful information. And what I realized is that authentic relating and circling has been studying this topic for the last 15 years. And authentic relating is a very unique animal, because it's actually been developed by 20 different teachers. And so in my book, I synthesize everything I learned from some of the founders of circling, and this particular psychological safety net is a tool that I actually didn't see anywhere else. And it's so simple. It's so, so simple. It's simply making reassuring statements. It's like, I have your back. I'm with you no matter what. I'm not breaking up with you, but I need to share this thing. It's like, because our nervous system is designed to scan for threat. Subconsciously, unconsciously, we're designed to scan for threat. Without the presence of a psychological safety statement, we tend to fear being thrown out of the tribe. And this is universal. I mean, there are a small number of people who had highly, highly emotionally attuned parents, and they grew up with a lot of ability for secure attachment. But that's not 90% of the population. Most of us had, you know, moments where we were attuned to emotionally and moments that we weren't. And that's just the nature of development. I would even go so far as to say 99.5% of us are that way. And relationships are built through hundreds of psychological safety statements. And what happened is, as I was writing the book, over the course of a year and a half, I started to notice, like, what are the highly intelligent people automatically without even thinking about it? And it's like, yeah, I really want to stay connected with you. I really want to be in regular communication with you. You know, that's a tiny little vulnerability. It's like, and I noticed that, you know, in my romantic relationships, you know, 5 to 15 years ago, I was extremely avoidant in communication, and it was all happening at the subconscious level. And it took a few big breakups and women in my life giving me feedback before I really woke up to how often am I not responding to a communication because I'm trying to get space. I'm trying to get emotional space by not responding to a communication or responding in a neutral way. Secure attachment, healthy secure attachment is like, oh, I need some space right now. And like, I'm coming back. I'm coming back tomorrow. I'm not going anywhere, right? And so I'm coming back, or just saying when you are available. I'm not available for that now. Can we talk about it on Monday? That's a psychological safety statement. It allows someone to be like, oh, I can take that conversation's going to happen later on. I'll put it on the shelf and attend to my life. It's almost like the opposite of, you know, we have this word gaslighting, which I'm definitely not going to go into that. If I'm anxious, then I'm not going to get my needs met, right? What I need from the other is a psychological safety statement that says, I can't meet your needs right now, but I'm coming back. All right, so deeper listening. So likely most of the people on this call understand what reflective listening is. You simply repeat back what someone says to them using either the same exact words or a summary of what they said to you. That way they know that they've been heard, and there is this relaxation that happens in the nervous system when we're reflected. I'm not crazy for thinking all of these things. You know, we have this process called emotional Aikido, which is a 5-step process. And step number 3 is called reflect and validate. Validating other people's perspectives, and not in a passive aggressive way. You don't say, I understand that's true for you. You don't say it that way. That's not reflect and validate. Reflect and validate is like, I hear you saying this, and if I was in your situation, yeah, I think I would feel that way too. Or I hear you saying this, that makes sense to me. Right? So reflecting, so that's reflective listening. That's like really important, solid skill that we need to have. And authentic relating has a lot of exercises to practice this. Deeper listening goes beyond that. And this is what nonviolent communication, the genius of nonviolent communication, taught us. Reflecting back to that person, the needs, wants, and motivations that you think so you have a model in your mind of how the other person is, what they're doing and why they're doing it, what their needs and wants are. And you say that to the other person and then you check your assumption. So I have a very long, I could probably talk for an hour on this particular one because it relates to how we make assumptions. But the deeper listening essentially means doesn't matter if this person's screaming in your face or they're upset or they're just, you know, behaving in a way that's a little bit confusing to you. You come out of just listening to the content and you listen to between the words, underneath the content, to the needs, wants, and motivations. There's a person over there trying to get their needs met. And you reflect that back to them and then you check. So that's kind of an advanced tool, actually. So we're 53 after the hour. I keep checking, keep coming out of that to check my time. So the last one, setting context. Setting context is kind of like the Swiss Army knife of authentic relating. It's a very versatile tool that can be used in a lot of different situations. And both context and listening are full chapters in my book with several tools related to each one. Setting context, the shorthand for me is sharing your why and what you want out of the conversation before sharing the what. This is called connection over content. If you just dump a bunch of content onto someone, emotional content onto someone, expect them to digest it and them to sort through it, that is not owning your experience. Owning your experience is kind of like, you know, giving someone the headline. You know, if all of your thoughts and opinions and everything about the situation is the article of the headline, you know, 5% of the information is what you share in the context setting. And then you share your why, and then you share what you want out of the conversation, and you bring patience and make sure that the conversation is set up to go well before you. So this is, setting context is the opposite of emotional dumping. I'll put it that way. So I'm going to stop the share from my screen, and we don't actually have time for questions, unfortunately. Gabby, how are we doing?
Yeah, I think we have time for one, Jason. Thank you so much for that. There is one that's been coming through. There's a theme I'm seeing in the chat and in the Q&A about how to handle these challenges with folks who might withdraw or shut down or get a little defensive. Even though we know it's not about us, it's about them. What would you recommend for those types of situations?
Yeah. So people who withdraw or defensive, I would say that's all of us. And someone in your life might have a pattern of withdrawal that's much stronger than yours. But it is a very, very natural response in our nervous system to produce more safety. And so validating that response, validating their patterns, validating them. And yeah, I think it's the tools that I named. Are you available on Saturday? That's a clear and vulnerable request. If someone's withdrawing, right? Are you available tomorrow? And defensiveness is the natural human response that we have to fear and to underlying fear. And so in general, never accusing someone of being defensive or withdrawing, because you're making those patterns wrong. And they're, Yeah, I think I've answered the question, but there's some deeper thing that I want to share. It's like we're all seeking safety and belonging, and we live on a planet of almost 8 billion people. There's this teacher who taught me about super stimulus. Super stimulus is like our smartphones are super stimulus. For hundreds of thousands of years, our nervous systems developed one way, and now we are. It's just, we don't know what to do if we live in an apartment that's surrounded by 100 other people. 100 other people live within 100 feet of where you live. No wonder people want space.
Thank you, Jason.
Yeah.
This was very, very insightful. It's just scratching the surface. So I know, folks, there were a lot of questions, a lot of curiosity here. So thank you for understanding, given the time that we do have today. We encourage you to continue this learning with the community. Georgina has popped some links so that you can continue this. We have, go ahead, Jason.
And I'm available if you want to reach out to me one-on-one. Just by finding me on Facebook, and we can chat on Facebook Messenger, and I can offer you different resources. So thank you everyone.
Fantastic.
For this session. Amazing. Yeah.
Great. So come find us on Facebook as well. There is a really great learning environment there. You can also join coffee breaks in the community section of the website. These are smaller breakouts, so you can get to know each other between sessions. And I also want to encourage you to own the Embodiment Conference Library so that you can digest all of this content in your own time. It's a great investment in your self-development. And we do understand that it's also a financial investment as well. So if you purchase the library during the conference, there are discounts of up to 50% off with some payment plans available. This ends when we wrap the conference on the 25th. And we really appreciate that as a thank you to us. And your support enables others to be able to join us live for free. Those also include notes on every session, audio recordings, if you really like to absorb information through podcasts, as well as learning lists to structure your learning and exploration in a logical way. So please keep an eye out on the chat for those links. Be sure to copy them because we will be wrapping this up shortly on the hour so we can make space for the next session, which is the circling method, embodied connection with Guy Sengstock. And I think Jason, you actually mentioned circling earlier. So hope you can join us for that one. I'll be there for tech support. So I hope to see you soon. So be sure to grab these links now. And Jason, I'll turn it back to you to close us out. If you could concisely capture your top tip to stay embodied, what would it be?
Breathe and move. Movement digests our emotional experience. Movement is an integrative action.
Beautiful. So wherever you are, folks, breathe and move. Enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you again, Jason, for sharing all of this. Thank you for being here, and we hope to see you again soon. Take care.
Thank you.